What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Witch of Black Ads. This is episode 31. What's up, Janelle?
Nothing, you know, or the same that's always going on.
Right. Same question, same response.
Right. How about you?
Nothing. It is Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth.
I don't know what we say. We just acknowledge that it is Juneteenth.
Well, that's the thing, which we'll talk about in a second. But feels like this week went by really, really fast. And I think it's because we were just together last weekend. But mm-hmm. We were like, let's not record because of some other stuff. But then Friday came really, really quick.
It did.
So it did. Here we are. How was your week?
It was hectic. Same. Happy to be here and doing something outside of work. But yeah, to your point, the week, it went by really, really fast, but also there was a lot jammed in there. So right. It's like my head was spinning a little bit.
Are you excited for the weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you mentioned, it's Juneteenth. I'm always looking forward to the weekend.
Right. supposed to have nice weather. Last time I was looking forward to a nice weekend, which was Memorial Day weekend. Wasn't the case. So
not at all.
Excited that this time it will be a different outcome. But we have just a few things to talk about today, and we have a very special interview, which I'll let you kind of announce. But do you want to dive into Above the Fold?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Yeah, so Above the Fold, I did mention just a few seconds ago that today is Juneteenth. And yesterday, or earlier this week, it was announced that it is now a federal... Yesterday, it was announced that it is now a federal holiday. How do we feel about this?
You know what? I've gotten to the point where just like certain news, you hear it and you're just like typical, you know? It's one of those things where it's just a pacification, like a band-aid on like a wound that kind of needs surgery. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like not even stitches. Like we need... When we talk about just how the general population came to know about Juneteenth only really like a year ago, people outside of the Black community, mm-hmm. and like what was going on during that time and what we were asking for at that time, right. and having like not gotten that, to even the past couple of weeks hearing about all the states passing legislation around like teaching critical race theory in school. Like, it's pretty backwards to me, because how do you tell kids that they have a day off from school because of Juneteenth, but then because of your ban on critical race theory, you can't even really get into the nuts and bolts of like why?
Right. Would you consider it like a form of gaslighting?
For sure.
Where the issues are and what we're asking for and what we're demanding around police reform and social justice. We want justice and all of those things. Like you said, the surgery, really going into the inner workings of what's wrong, is not happening.
Right.
We're told it takes time.
It's giving Nancy Pelosi taking a knee with her kente cloth.
That's very much what this is. Giving. Like, okay, I see you. Great. Mm-hmm. And then I think you brought up a good point before when you were like, you know, what is Juneteenth going to become? Is it a mistake? Like how the rest of the world receives it or the rest of the country receives it once it becomes a federal holiday? Are we going to start seeing Juneteenth sales? Are we going to start seeing... You know, that type of thing.
Or even like when
BOGO,
you see...
Juneteenth BOGO. Like, what is happening?
Even like... And I know, like, now they're more memes than they are, like, actual things. But, like, MLK Day and you see flyers with, like strippers twerking on MLK in Atlanta. And I'm like, yo, are we... Is that... That's where we're heading with this. And it's just unfortunate. Because we didn't... This is not what we asked for. At least this is not what I asked for.
I surely am an answer, so. And then I think coupled with that, in addition to the conversation, what happened in Tulsa, you know, and now that is protected, you know, in terms of some of those family members still seeking and wanting justice. And it's like, no, under the statute of limitations, yeah, we know we did wrong, but it ain't nothing we can do for you.
Yeah, and we're not even going to teach it in the schools.
These are things that we're talking about, and that's not taught in schools, that isn't moving forward. But then, you know, we're supposed to be celebrating, smiling ear to ear, smiling to break the chains for Juneteenth.
You know what? And it also, what still bothers me about, like, this is the fact that, like, white people get off too. Like, what? Like, what y'all, whatever. Don't get me started. I know I'm already started, but like, I don't really want to get into it.
I mean, we can dead it there. But yeah. I think that's the conversation. And I think that's what needs to be recognized. Like, okay, thank you. Great. It's recognized. I think that is, however you want to phrase it, a win in some type of way. Mm-hmm. But that's literally the tip of what needs to happen.
Yeah. You know what I think it is? I think Juneteenth needs better PR. Like, similar to what happened with MLK Day, where it was just like, okay, it was a holiday, it was a day off, and then it became like a day of service, mm-hmm. right? Like, what is going to be Juneteenth's thing? Because it can't just be a day off from work and the federal government saying, like, whatever the hell they said yesterday. Right. There has to be something that ties back to the community that's added to the context of this for it to give it some kind of meaning outside of
some sort of levity that's beyond recognition of the holiday. It's a holiday. That, like you said, means something, that's driving something forward. So yeah. We'll see what that becomes in the years to come. But this is hot off the press. First mm-hmm. time it being a federal holiday. But with all of that, there's been a lot of tentpole moments this month. You know, this month is Pride Month. You know, Juneteenth happened this month. Father's Day is this month. And Black Music Month. So there's a lot in terms of brands and companies being able to lean in into these moments. Have you seen anything, or what kind of feels have you been catching over the past month?
Just overall, I mean, to be completely honest, overall, nothing's really caught my eye, because it was all kind of expected. Like, of course, everybody's going to change their logo to a rainbow and then, like, not do anything outside of that. Juneteenth is going to come around and you're going to give your employees off.
Or put up a statement.
So, I don't know. It hasn't been much. Nothing that I felt was that impactful, right. I'll say. And I also think that this month, to your point, there's just a lot going on and a lot of places where brands are trying to funnel their energy or conversations they're trying to be a part of, where it's like, maybe you should sit this one out. Maybe you should pass the mic. Maybe, you know.
Right.
So...
yeah, I agree to a lot of what you said. A lot of these things are expected. I think at some point you do kind of, it's just noise. You know, you do because you have to do. It's a moment. You have to lean in. Campaigns have to happen. So, hey, let's splash the rainbow. Let's put out a statement for Juneteenth. Okay, it's Father's Day. Let's put out something that's very touching and whatever. Mm-hmm. So... all of that is true. I don't know. I think because of all the noise, it's harder to break through, especially coming off and still in this year of COVID. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple that I think we wanted to mention that we just saw that we were like, okay, nice, beautiful campaigns. So I'll let you kind of introduce the first one, because I did see you. Did you repost it?
I did.
You reposted it first, though.
Yeah. The first one was Reebok. Their partnership with Kirby or with Pierre Moss as a whole. Still unclear on how that partnership works. But they put out a really beautiful spot. Like you said, beautiful campaigns. You know, like, again, like, I don't know what the broader purpose or broader, you know, outside of that digital content, what comes of it, but I'm a fan of beautifully shot content, manifestos and all of that shit. So kudos to them.
Yeah, I think the broader context is, like you said, the partnership with Herbie or Pierre Moss or whatever that is. I think this was a snapshot or the first take of what the new brand direction is, because they did wipe their entire Instagram and started off with kind of like this brand refresh. And I mm-hmm. think that it's kind of like a short film, about 12 minutes. Yeah. Did you watch the whole mm-hmm. entire spot? It was very inspirational. And I think the whole campaign is around something about not down on the sidelines.
See?
Yeah. Oh. Something is not a spectator sport.
I don't know. I remember one quote about like your body being your first piece of real estate or something like that, which I was like, okay, poignant.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Because life is not a spectator sport, is the overarching brand slogan or whatever. But yeah, I think more than anything, that's how I saw it. I was like, okay, this is the direction that they're going in. Beautiful black people, mm-hmm. kind of like centered and centric, and very aspirational and, you know, speaking to the youth, speaking to black people, and being relatable in the sense of, you know, it wasn't glitz and glamour. It was like a everyday regular people, regular neighborhood in a park, but...
And it was rather light, too. I feel like a lot of times, especially within the last year or so, content that comes out that centers black people, it's got this, like, heaviness to mm-hmm. it. And it leads you to ask, like, okay, what's the deeper whatever? And I'm like, at the end of the day, these are brands selling product and, like... Sometimes that's as deep as it goes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, why have we grown accustomed to like looking for like the deeper meaning behind shit that like a Nike puts out? It's fucking Nike. Just buy the damn shoes or don't, you know? And so sometimes I catch myself doing that. And then other times I'm like, am I expecting too much? And like, can it just be a beautifully shot 12-minute art film and I move, you know, I watch it, I enjoy, and I go about my day?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And I think that's a fair assessment. I think a lot of times, especially now, we're putting a lot of onus on brands because brands have started to position themselves in that light to say, you know, we're committed to X, Y, and Z. And I think that's the reason why we're always looking for those layers where they don't always need to exist, to your point. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's how I'm taking this Reebok spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then another spot that we saw was P&G's. They did another part of their content series on with Widen the Screen. And this one is called These Hands. I saw this during the Oprah special that she was running for Father's Day. And while that's my first time seeing, I'm not sure when it actually dropped. But it was just like a father and his child on a football field. And, you know, someone was like, oh, he has talent. You know, take care of those hands. And then the young boy was pretty much inspired by hearing that. And he was like, Dad, can I really do that with these hands? And then he takes him through all of these things that he actually can do.
Yeah. To backtrack, it was specifically talking about like being a pro football player. And he was like, I'm going to play pro football player. I'm going to be a pro football player with these hands. And then it was like the dad showing him that's not all your hands can do, because, you know, again, kind of combating that stereotype about black folks, like, you know, in certain sports and not really, you know, you see yourself in like sports and entertainment and representation there, but not necessarily in STEM fields and, mm-hmm. you know, in some forms of the arts and things of that nature. So just kind of it showed like what else this young black boy's hands could potentially do.
Yep. And I like that they use actual real examples of what those real hands could do. So it went to like brain surgery and astronauts of real black people to say, mm-hmm. you could do this like this person or like this person.
Yeah. And they actually had them in there too. So like, you could be a sports agent like Rich Paul. You could be an artist like Blue the Great, you know. And they were actually in the spot, which, you know, it's always great to see a familiar face.
It was a really dope spot, also inspirational and aspirational from P&G.
Yeah.
Which I really like what they're doing with widening the screen.
I do too. We talked about that kind of platform a couple podcasts ago, and how excited we were to kind of see where else it led. So happy to see.
So far, so good. Yeah. So if you haven't checked that spot out, do it. I thought it was really great, tasteful, just like the last ones.
Yeah. Next one we have is Shea Moisture Men. So this one really kind of centered around Father's Day. It actually kind of touched a lot of different points, if we're being honest. But it was primarily for Father's Day, and, you know, beautifully shot. Kind of the tone, what really drew me to the spot were like the tones of the spot. And it's very similar. If you go to like Shea Moisture's Instagram feed, primarily Instagram, the Shea Moisture Men feed, it has this kind of like aesthetic to it. So it kind of followed that, but it showed, I think it was called like A Father's Lullaby, and it had like an original song that they then featured on Spotify and streaming and things of that nature. But it showed like a dad with like their small kid, or father with like the two, you know, adult kids, and playing this song and just showing the relationship between father and child. But I mean, it was all obviously men of color because the brand is Shea Moisture Men. But I felt like it kind of hit a lot of these different tempo moments that we talk about, like from Father's Day, Black Music Month, all of that.
Yeah, it did. Pride also.
Pride,
had
yeah.
a couple of nods in there. But yeah, also another beautiful spot.
Beautiful spot.
Beautiful spot.
We got to put like Aretha Franklin in here talking about beautiful gowns. Even though this is not shade, and she meant it as shade, yes. But yeah. And then the last one isn't a spot necessarily, though there was a spot that was kind of associated with it, but it was a platform that I don't think we got a chance to talk about. I think it launched mid last month by Spotify, called Frequency. And this is kind of a culmination of kind of all of the things that they're doing on the platform around Black music, right? So we already know they have like Rap Caviar, and they have like the Afrobeat stuff, and, you know, just kind of putting a name or a bow around all of that with Frequency, which is their, again, platform that's focused entirely on celebrating Black art, entertainment, creativity, culture, and community, both on and off the platform. So in their spot, they featured some artists, they featured a lot of their original or exclusive podcast partners and things of that nature. So this is another one where I'm excited to see what comes of this outside of creating more playlists and editorial pieces, but like they talked about on and off the platform. So like, what's that off platform piece and things of that nature?
Very interested to see what that off-platform pieces. Sometimes it's hard for me to really identify with some of these platforms when they're like, we're going to expand outside of what you know we do, like what you said with the podcast or playlists. What beyond that does this look like?
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously you can't create like a Black audience initiative without there being some kind of give back component to it. So they've committed to invest in Black creators through a $10 million racial equity donations and giving program. It's not many specifics around what exactly that looks like, but it's there.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's kind of all we had for Above the Fold this week, obviously knowing that like our interview is going to take up a chunk of the time this week. So looking forward to jumping into that next. All right. So as we mentioned, we have two very special guests with us this week. We were really, really, really looking forward to this interview. We have Kika and Big Kika here with us. They're the owners of Gorilla RX Wellness, which is a new dispensary that is coming to Crenshaw. Actually, correct me if I'm wrong, the first Black woman-owned dispensary in LA County, which like mind blown.
Right.
And friends of the show. So welcome, welcome. Thank you guys for joining us today.
Oh, we're so happy to have you guys.
Happy to have you. So can you guys kind of tell us a little bit more about Gorilla Rx Wellness and kind of how you came to this space?
Sure. It's been a long journey. I come from parents that have always had such a heightened awareness of cannabis and the health benefits, you know, and they would always say that everything we need comes from this earth. And on top of that heightened awareness, my parents have been community activists for all of my life. And so I've witnessed and understood the importance of being a voice to the voiceless. So when those two worlds collided together with cannabis, you know, and we know as Black people how that has ravaged our communities, the war on drugs, right? I always say the war on Black and brown people. And so as this opportunity has come for legalization, you know, I got in early in 2017 in Los Angeles to take advantage of an opportunity to bring my beverage company that I had in Whole Foods for years, Gorilla Life, and bring an infused chlorophyll water to the cannabis market. That's what I thought. I thought I was just going to go get a license for my manufacturing facility. And as I started to go, I knew I had to understand the regulations from having my own manufacturing facility. You can't do nothing without having the fear of an auditor coming. So you have to follow the rules so intently. And so when I came into cannabis, knowing that now we're going from, you know, the garages and the street corners to now having auditors that are watching what you do. And so I really immersed myself in educating and learning the policies. And when I started doing that, I was like, wait a minute, this thing is designed to fail. Because now they've created a program that they say is supposed to be reparations, right? To repair the wrongs of the war on drugs. Vote for recreational marijuana, right? It's happening in New York right now.
Right.
And make sure to invest back into these communities and create these opportunities, you know, for the people who have suffered. And it's quite the opposite. They've created so many hoops, no access to capital, no education. It has been this Trojan horse by these big white corporations to be able to come in and get it legalized, but then take over the industry. White men operate over 85% of all of the licenses across this country. And so then it became this charge, you know, going back to my parents being activists and saying, oh, no, they're not going to do it again. They did it for tobacco, alcohol, cotton, you name it. The tech industry, all of it, they have kept us out as a people from ownership. They just want to consumers. And so that's how Gorilla Rx was birthed. You know, I saw the need to really immerse myself in ensuring that not only do I get a license, but that all every single person that I can of my people that I could bring across the finish line in order to make sure not only are we open, but that we create an ecosystem. So we always hear about dispensaries, but you got the cultivators, you got the manufacturers, the distribution licenses. And if we don't have us as a people start to lock down the supply chain, that's how they'll keep us out even after we get the licenses. So I've had to take on this twofold approach of being an activist as well as being an entrepreneur that I am at heart. And so that has given birth 3 years later to, we call it the house that the people built, because it has been a collective effort to fight for laws to be changed, policies to be changed. We had to file a lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles to ensure that we can open our doors. And as you just said, I will be the first one to open. And that says a lot, although it's something that we are in victory about, you know, and we count it as a win. You know, we also understand the battle that's in front of us and want to inform and want to tell people we got to be a part of this. That's how I got engaged. Black politicians came into LA and said, this will be the last time in your lifetime that you will be able to be a part of a brand new industry. And that's what sparked me to get involved, because I never, from the time that I was going with my parents and listening to Jesse Jackson back in the day, you know, it has been rare to see politicians speak directly to the Black community. Mm-hmm. And so I heard that, and though, you know, the laws have not been met in our favor, the fact is the laws exist, and they are supposed to give folks that are previously incarcerated or arrested. They are to give those of us that have grown up in these communities, in these zip codes that we have the disproportionate arrests. We are supposed to have priority and licensing and tax dollars going into our community. And so that's what we're here to share and represent and be as loud as we can about it. So I'm glad to be able to speak to you guys as audience and the great work that you all are doing on that side as well. It's important that we all get on board with this.
Yeah. Oh my God. I know, like it's crazy because, you know, hearing you speak about kind of how the laws have been set up, and, you know, we talk about it a lot just across industries, how institutionally, you know, structurally we have been kept out of certain spaces. But with the recent kind of legislation and legalization of cannabis across the country, there always seems to be this kind of social equity piece to it. And it's what it sounds like you're saying is that even though, like, on paper that piece is written in, there's still so many hurdles and roadblocks, which is very unfortunate. Like, you know, recently New York legalized marijuana, and there's this racial equity piece to it. But I always wonder, like, how does that actually manifest? So, you know, I guess, in addition to the struggles that you've had and having to sue the county and things of that nature, are there any places that you feel are doing it right, or things that people need to watch out for when they see that there are these equity pieces that are built in, but, like, are actually just ways for these jurisdictions to, like, check a box and say, like, we offered the thing?
As there is always, they love to have the tokens to say, this is a model, and we keep repeating this story, but there's only one of ones. You know, we're just in a good time though, right now, that the community is becoming aware, because for the few years, it's been so stigmatized in our community. You can't go to the Black churches and say, let's be a part of this. Let's demand these tax dollars go into our community. And so we're just now realizing and looking around like, oh, hold on. This is our time to organize as people and understand the importance of it, whether we're going to get a license or not, that this is a brand new industry that is unlike any other. There is regulations that say that this is to benefit the people who have been harmed by it. And if you look at the statistics, I know in LA, Black men have been 7 times more likely to be arrested than their white counterparts, right? And so when we identify that, that's something that is on the books that we can start fighting for, and ensure that we have a place. So it is actually a great moment in time, you know, that we can actually effectuate policies that will affect generation and our generational wealth. And on the heels of Black Wall Street and, you know, that commemoration, we have to understand what the fight is and start focusing on that economic development. And this cannabis piece, whether we agree about the usage or of it or whatever, the economic position that we can take in this is incredible and limitless. And there are laws in place that they actually have to abide by if we hold them to it.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful statement. And I think one of the things that keep us out of these spaces is because we feel like it's just too much. I don't know enough about, you know, the regulations in the industry, you know, for it to have affected us the way it has when it comes to incarceration rates and things of that magnitude. We don't know inherently the right way to go about it. And sometimes the red tape and all of that seems like it's way too much. You made a statement, I believe, on your Instagram, Big Kika, when you said, my priority is to ensure transparency in our process from a step-by-step perspective so that anyone looking to harvest a legacy within cannabis has a clear blueprint. I think that's powerful, and much of what you already have said is, it feels like it's bigger than you. You know, what you're doing right now isn't for me. This is beyond, this is for my people. And I think that's huge. I just want to understand a little bit more around that statement, specifically, you know, what that blueprint is. So I know that what you thought was an easy process, you get into it and it's like, no. What has that felt like for you to start to understand those regulations and the pieces that come with it?
You know, I say it started to feel like a video game that I'm in, right? And when you start looking at the hurdles of, oh, damn, another hurdle, forget this, I don't want to do it. It's when you're in a video game playing, that's the game. You got to figure out, you know, how to get around it. And if you got them tools, you used to watch, play Tomb Raiders and Lara Croft. So if you got enough of those tools, and one thing that's so beautiful about this moment is that everybody is reading these regulations for the first time, right? So these white business owners that have their consultants and lawyers and whoever else, they're reading at the same time I'm reading, and I can go toe-to-toe with any one of them without having any sort of law background, degrees, none of those things do I have, but I can sit in a room any day because I read the regulations, I read them again, I created a group of 10 of us, and 10 grew to 20, grew to 30, and we just studied those things ourselves, and we went to the meetings. They're all discovering these things for the first time. All the legislators, all the councilmen, all of the senators. So it also gives us the ability to shape those things to how we want to interpret them. Right. And so then it becomes an empowering thing. At first, it is an obstacle. And so that's what I've just chosen to do, to be able to say to people, wait, we started from the bottom in all the real ways. I've lived through all the inner cities throughout this country. That's how I was raised. And so I don't come from a privileged background. And if I can do it, you can do it. I've seen my daughter come in and she's fallen in line and the community has. And so then that has just been my charge. How do we break it down and take the if then the thous and the thens out of it and just create really plain, simple language? I took the regulations and made clip notes for them, so I could understand, and then I shared them with those 10 people and they shared them. And that's all we have to do, because once again, we're all learning it for the first time, because this is a brand new industry. We have so many intellects between all of us. We are people of great genius, that if we just go to the simplicity of it all and start sharing and educating each other and passing that information around like the Underground Railroad and like Marcus Garvey and them built, right? They had that newspaper that they put out. And when we just start continuing to shed and share this information, we all see where there's a space for all of us. And if it's nothing more than contributing to the growth of those that choose to get the licenses, then we all get to eat and we start to see our communities flourish, because it is enough money in this cannabis industry to create a legacy and generational wealth for you and your children, and give back some more. And it just continues, because what? If you look at the number of people that are now consuming cannabis, that number will exponentially grow. It is a commodity, for sure. Like some lemons or some oranges or some broccoli, right? Yeah. It just has a profitability that we can all eat, and our family and our children and our children's children can eat off of it. And then we can get it more into the health benefits of it, because that's even more amazing. That's what makes us even more amazing. Let's get out of the abuse side of it. But if we get into medical benefits and what it does to your endocannabinoid system and how all those receptors come to life by different ways that you can use it and then take it and have it be a part of your lifestyle and your family's lifestyle, we'll all be happy and mellow and full of joy, moving creatively. And when we tap into all of those elements, and that's what I do when I go into the community, we go into neighborhood councils and I'm talking to senior citizens now, right? And I start off, I don't tell them about all the social equity. I start talking to them about how it works on their arthritis and the topicals that they can use and the aids for sleep and what it really does for your body and the difference between CBD and THC. And then all of a sudden it's, where can I get some of this at? The call down to City Hall tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Yes. They'll call 10 times. And then they become our grassroots lobbyists and advocates, because this is a political battle. They don't want us in this. No, they don't want us in this. And so the obstacles are not about the regulations, but it's about being prepared enough to fight all these people that don't want us in this industry. And yeah, that's the part that I actually get the enjoyment out of, beating what they intended to not have us be a part of.
I think add to that, when we think about a blueprint, Something that's completely unique with our space is that we've been sitting on this space for 3 years. So what we're seeing now and the transparency on social media with the process is really gratifying for those of us who have seen the space and walked by, and you've had, you know, the people in the community coming by and being like, well, when is this going to open, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to be able to broadcast that. And for those of us who are joining into the fight in other states as they legalize, we get to see that, okay, well, while you were sitting on your space, you were able to actually bring the community in and offer training and courses and hand-to-hand, you know, community access to the industry, and really play up the educational side of things, so that by the time we open doors, you know, our community really feels a part of the growth of the space, right? From going and having everything be white walls and, you know, plaster, to being able to like sandblast down the walls to like reveal like brick, and have someone from the community come in and paint and be able to like, you know, remake the floors. I think all of that gives you a sense of pride, as opposed to the feeling we all know if you look at someplace like a Bed-Stuy and you're like, wow, like y'all are opening all these businesses that are supposed to be beautifying the community, but you're pricing us out. And so we know what that means, right? So what does that mean when we're the ones cleaning up the streets and we're the ones, you know, starting that Black enterprise and making things affordable and having, you know, everything from something that you could purchase for $10 to the more premium, you know, lifestyle items. I think, you know, what we do is it begins a trend where you're not pricing out the community, but you're meeting everybody where they're at and still bringing this like accessible luxury to the market, which is really dope.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm wondering then, you know, again, cannabis is still illegal at the federal level, but we see a lot of states that are legalizing it. So what can people in places where the conversation is just kind of starting around legalization, or the conversation hasn't started yet? So again, you talk about having that space for 3 years and kind of doing that work and kind of preparing yourself in the community for what that space looks like. What can people who are living in those other areas that may, you know, might not be as far along as a California, what can they do right now?
Begin to start studying what's happening in other places. Because all of these laws and policies happen because there's some pressure from the public sector, right? And usually that pressure is from these large corporations that want it legalized in these states that haven't legalized, right? So if we meet that same pressure and we look at, okay, what cities did do social equity, right? Oh, I like New York. New York has 50% going to the community's education, right? I like that component. Oh, Oakland did it right because they allow for incubators. Oh, LA didn't do this right. So you begin to see there's consistencies. Everyone's using the same language, right? City by city, they just change or take off pieces. And so when you just start reading and saying, reading the articles, this is what I want. You start going to your neighborhood and you organize them, letting the neighborhood councils, they're called different things in the community, but we know these groups in our communities that meet once a month. And we began to say the importance where tax dollars can come back to our neighborhood programs. Then we start as a group going to our city councilmen. And we start saying to them, I know y'all are talking about it, or you haven't started talking about, when you do talk about it, these are the things we want to see if you legalize marijuana in our state, and start those relationships early. That's been the challenge. We've been on the defense. And so we're picking up the crumbs after they've already decided and wrote the regulations. So the people who don't have it actually have the most advantage right now. This is a time to properly prepare. Do like you do when folks get together and invest in real estate together. I'm seeing that happen in Georgia and Alabama, Mississippi. Pull some money together and say, hey, we're going to collectively go after these licenses after we push for this, right? Mm-hmm. It's enough time to start properly preparing. We just have to understand the significance. And folks that don't want to be directly involved, whether you're accountants or architects, the ancillary businesses, it's like the gold rush, right? The picks and shovels actually made the most money, right? Highly taxed. But every other skill that you have, whether you're in social media, whatever, if you focus that energy towards the cannabis market, there's nobody in it right now. Mm-hmm. So it gives such great opportunity as people are pulling their money together, that even the ones that don't want to be directly involved in the day-to-day or the license, they have some skill that is transferable. And all you got to do right now is just read, because it's all new. So you're learning it and understanding it as it's happening. And it's just a great moment, especially for folks where it hasn't opened up yet.
I think too, something to think about that really like broadened my perspective on cannabis is realizing that, you know, a lot of times when we want to start businesses or we want to give back to the community or we want to push initiatives or beautify, you know, our streets, we have to go out for grants or, you know, state funding or different things like that. So what happens when you're creating your own revenue system that you can decide, okay, well, if, you know, the standard dispensary makes something like $100,000 a day, after you're meeting your quota, you have a percentage that you can set aside to independently fund, you know, community organizations and, you know, beautify your YMCAs or start inner city youth orchestras or whatever it is that you want to do, funneling it into what your existing passions are. I think that's really the beauty of, you know, trying to figure out this untapped revenue source that, you know, everybody else is figuring out how they want to spend the money before it actually even starts coming through the doors. And I think when you're speaking to elders in the community that, you know, have certain stigmas around cannabis, thinking about how we normally have to go to the door and knock and, you know, ask for seconds. And instead, you know, we can really be providing that sustenance to our own communities through something, again, that we all know very well.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's something that I don't think I ever really thought of, you know, maybe the people being in places where it's not as where the conversation isn't really happening, being at an advantage because they get to really shape. They don't have to play by the rules that have already been written. They get to write their own rules, you know, with the people who have the power to like actually put that in place. Yeah. So I have a question around, we talked about all the different avenues within cannabis you can play in, right? But we're seeing a lot of celebrities attached to these cannabis brands and stuff, and Black celebrities too. So you have Jay-Z's Monogram, and Snoop, you know, has a line, and like Bob Marley has had a line for I don't know how long. And, you know, so do you guys see that as a benefit to the space? Is it more of a hindrance around equity? How do you guys have any opinion on celebrity in the space of cannabis?
I actually have welcomed the Black celebrities because as the biggest challenge we have is access to capital. And, you know, traditionally it's a hard, where we get money from as Black entrepreneurs, right? And as I've knocked on a lot of Black doors originally, there was like, nah, I'm not interested type of a PC immediately, right? They didn't understand the value in the industry. Well, now that you have a Jay-Z coming in, all of a sudden it's a cool factor. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you how many Black athletes, everybody all of a sudden is interested right. in investing. So for that purpose, for the social equity program and those, I'd much rather get some money from one of my brothers or sisters, you know, to invest, that I have a wholly Black-owned business. I would love to say that. So there's an advantage to that. But then I'd also say, once again, let's move on to offense, Black people. Because we see that, and that actually is one of the biggest opportunities for us as a people who are so creative. Create a brand, right? The licensing has so many hoops. For those of us who have the wherewithal, let's do it. We need those licenses. But then there's this other side, because we have marketing geniuses, right? We create the culture. You know, what's right. interesting about those is it's kind of like, it's these white companies that get these celebrities to throw their name on their brand. Right? That's what that is. So that's still not culture. You still don't feel Jay-Z when you walk into the dispensary doors because Jay-Z ain't behind his, he's not, this isn't his brand. Mm-hmm. So we have the opportunity as Black people, or people of color, to bring brands to the market. Let's look at that, right? And then as we market who we are on those shelves. And that's what the cannabis industry lacks. You know, the only one that I see attempting to move in that way successfully is Cookies. But, you know, that's a really small element and it's not our culture. And we really need to bring that. And it's such a wide open opportunity. And that goes earlier to what I was saying about, you know, me really working to help and assist as many folks with their licensing applications so that we can control the supply chain. So that you don't have to cultivate, but you should be able to go to a Black grower and say, I have this idea for my brand and they grow it for you. And then you should be able to take that over to the Black manufacturer and say, here goes my cannabis from over here. Here goes my brand. I need you to package it up for me and send it out to all your distribution channels, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we need. And once again, we're so skilled in other industries. Our scientists need to be coming to the table and opening up these testing labs. Where we at, y'all, Black scientists? Right. We've been in all our Black truck drivers. Why are we not opening up distribution companies in cannabis, right? You know, we're in each of these fields and we need to look at, we working for them and create, we have this great opportunity. And it's right now in real time that once we start getting enough of us in it, then we start to see us being able to take a fair share of the market. And that's the goal.
Wow. This has been like completely and totally amazing. I'm not sure if you have anything else.
I'm sure. My mind's just like racing a million miles a minute. I'm like, okay, so how do I get
what part do I want to play? Right. You let me know all the components. I'm like, okay, where do I fit? How can I fit in here? I'm going to figure it out. And if I have some questions, I will be like.
That's a good question. And I'll say this. It is my ultimate pleasure and joy to be able to share information, because when I struggled in the beverage industry coming in as a Black woman in a product in Whole Foods, and I didn't see nobody that looked like me, and there was no one that shared me direct information about the beverage industry. Maybe you could tell me about retail. Maybe you could tell me about some ice cream, but you couldn't tell me about beverages. And so I had to figure it out all myself, do trial and tribulation, having my own manufacturing facility, having my own distribution. And I should have been a billionaire by now if I didn't have to figure it out all by myself and take all that time. And so it is my pleasure to share as much as I can, whenever I can, however I can. Sometimes it's just a 5-minute answer to a question, say, go to this website. A life development group has been something that I've had for years, and I've used it for this. And it's just really about bringing folks in different areas and filling them up with what they need to make their life path a lot simpler. And so lifedevelopmentgroup.org is our website. There's a free consultation button. There's the classes and the workshops that we've done. But we always are willing to get on the call and point folks in the right direction without asking for no equity and no nothing, just being able to want to get as many of us together to be able to be ready right now. And so if you got some questions or you want some more, that's how we can stay connected. And I have a team of folks around me that are that willing to share the same information and very experienced, and we're here to help.
Awesome. Love that. Love that. And thank you for dropping those links and stuff. I'll connect with you again and make sure I have them in writing so that we can share those with the listeners and put those on social media and things of that nature. But again, just kind of hearing you talk about just like all of the different ways to get involved and things that I think, you know, a lot of people just don't necessarily think about, like, how can I put my skills and talents towards this industry? You know, even if it isn't directly touching the product or directly related to the product, but from a branding perspective, from a distribution perspective, from a marketing perspective, I think that really kind of opens up then a lot of opportunities in a lot of different lanes. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. And additionally, I'll just say thank you for the work. As we just got a glimpse into you describing kind of like what this space looks like in the different spaces that you all have been involved in. One of the things that I called out before, it seems like a lot of the work that you have been driving has been the fabric of your family, and how you show up in the social spaces, and we see it. But I want to say thank you, because whatever drives us forward drives us forward, and this work is definitely driving us forward. And to see Black women in the space that I think, you know, is just phenomenal in and of itself. Black women, I always give credit when credit is due.
And it's always due.
So I do want to say thank you.
We receive all that from that Black man over there. All that. Back at you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both so very much. This has been, again, a great conversation, an enlightening conversation, and we just really appreciate your time.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Y'all, blessings.
All right, so we always do this before we wrap, and that is determining who gets Going With Your Black Ads or That Ain't It. This week, I'm going to go ahead and give it to Kika and Big Kika, just because what they're doing is absolutely groundbreaking and very inspirational. And I think, you know, who else am I going to give it to on this episode? You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's my vote. And That Ain't It.
The federal government.
Ooh. There you have it.
For everything.
Right. Like, we don't do, should we go down the list? But yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
And thank y'all as always for tuning in. Please, please share this podcast with your friends.
Like, subscribe, comment, repost, reshare, all the things on all the platforms.
There we go. Just cut the sound bite and put it in. But yeah, see y'all next time. Thanks again.
That's what the fuck I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. It was so black ass. It was black ass.